consequences of a government shutdown are devastating. A lot of people think it just affects the public sector, but that's not true. It's the private sector as well.
Will lawmakers pass a budget by tomorrow or face another special session? From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, June 15th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, federal officials apologize for the internment of Unangan people during World War II.
As much as we wish, we cannot take back the course of history. But what we can do now is heal together.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Leaders from both chambers of the legislature met behind closed doors today as they tried to reach a budget agreement, but there was little public progress. The 30-day special session will end tomorrow, and House and Senate majorities remained far apart. Fairbanks Republican Senate President Pete Kelly says leaders should focus on the budget.
The highest priority we have in the Senate is to avoid a government shutdown, and that means we have to pass an operating budget. The consequences of a government shutdown are devastating. A lot of people think it just affects the public sector, but that's not true. It's the private sector as well.
Kelly singled out the state's fishing industry as an example of an important business sector likely to be damaged by a shutdown. Dillingham Democratic House Speaker Bryce Edgman was in a caucus meeting this afternoon. Last evening, he said the House majority wanted to reach an agreement on the long-term plan to balance the amount the state government spends with what it receives.
Our caucus has taken a very difficult, but we think appropriate position in that we want to get a responsible budget in place this year. We do not want to shut down, but we also do not want to be back in the situation again next year.
Senator Kelly says it's still possible to reach an agreement tonight and tomorrow. If that doesn't happen, Governor Bill Walker is likely to call lawmakers into another special session. The legislature must pass a budget before July 1st to prevent a shutdown. Today, Governor Bill Walker signed House Bill 132 into law, opening up business in Alaska for so-called transportation network companies, or TNCs. Those include popular taxi alternatives like Uber and Lyft. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, the companies already laid much of the groundwork to start operations before ink from the governor's pen was even dry.
Lyft has spent the last month recruiting new drivers in Alaska,
specifically in Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks.
Scott Coriel is the communications manager for Lyft in San Francisco. He says the company is accepting customers immediately.
The bill that passed the legislature goes into effect immediately upon the signature of the governor. So we will turn the system on. Folks who are approved to drive can open up the app and start driving, and folks who want to ride can download the app, turn it on, and request a ride to where they need to go.
Lyft differentiates itself from competitor Uber by having more driver-friendly features, like being able to pay a tip from within the smartphone app. Coriel says the vast majority of Lyft's drivers work part-time, many to earn extra income. Though it's received nowhere near the amount of negative attention over labor and leadership issues as Uber, Lyft did settle a $27 million lawsuit in California earlier this year over how it classifies drivers. Issues like that were a key reason why TNCs had to stop operating in Alaska back in 2014. But if you live in Nome, Sitka, or the taxicab capital of America, Bethel, don't expect TNCs too soon. Coriel says while the company would like to expand to smaller communities in Alaska, it's not quite there yet.
You know, we do have to do some work on our end to launch those regions and make sure that we're operating in places in those regions that make sense, but also comply with any sort of regulations that there are.
For drivers who have to use their own vehicles, that means meeting inspection standards and passing personal background checks. Patrick Carter, a lobbyist for Uber in Alaska, says the company is expected to begin operations within a day of the signing and plans to host a launch party next week. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The largest tribal government in Alaska is sticking by the Paris Climate Change Accord. Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska says it will continue to support the agreement, which aims to reduce the world's carbon emissions and slow climate change. Earlier this month, President Donald Trump announced that the U.S. would be pulling out of the accord, joining countries like Nicaragua and Syria. Central Council President Richard Peterson says that surprised him.
He's a businessman, and I think it's proven right now that an alternative energies is a good business.
Peterson says Central Council will try to do its part by working on renewable energy solutions. He says Alaska is already experiencing the effects of a warming planet. Villages are crumbling into the ocean.
You know, for us, it comes down to the fact that as Alaska Natives, as the first people, you know, we have a responsibility as caretakers, and we're responsible for these lands. And more importantly, we're responsible for what we pass down to future generations.
The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe in North Dakota is also supporting the Paris Accord. In Washington, the Quinault Indian Nation and Swinomish Indian Tribal Community have made a similar pledge. Governor Bill Walker has acknowledged the effects of climate change in the state, but didn't condemn President Trump's decision. Federal officials apologized yesterday for their role in the World War II internment of the Unungan people. Jim Kurth is acting director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and traveled to St. Paul Island to speak with survivors and descendants.
As much as we wish, we cannot take back the course of history. But what we can do now is heal together.
Fish and wildlife agents oversaw the internment of the people of the Pribilof Islands. They were sent to inhumane camps in southeast Alaska, where many perished due to illness and starvation after the Japanese bombed Dutch Harbor in 1942. In all, nearly 900 Alaska Natives were evacuated from the Aleutian and Pribilof Islands. The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs on Tuesday approved a bill that would make tribes eligible for Amber Alert grants. Amber Alert is an emergency broadcast system that issues messages in the event of child abductions. They are not used in the event of runaways or family abductions. The bill would also create a permanent program that provides tribes with Amber Alert training. According to a draft resolution from the National Congress of American Indians, more than 7,000 American Indian children are listed as missing in the United States. Since March 2009, when Amber Alerts were first implemented in Alaska, 6 alerts have been issued in the state. Paul Fussy is the search and rescue coordinator with the Alaska Department of Public Safety. He says because many Alaska communities are either off the road system or otherwise isolated, it's difficult for a child to be removed from their area. He says 5 Amber Alerts were based out of Anchorage and 1 was from Palmer. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, spending your life at the only store in Dead Horse.
When Alaska Airlines first came up here, they had brought Playboy bunnies and beer kegs.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Should Southeast's Regional Native Corporation shrink its governing board? That's a question before Sea Alaska Corporation's more than 22,000 shareholders. Management opposes the change. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Juneau-headquartered Sea Alaska has 13 members on its board of directors. Shareholder Karen Togg thinks that's too many and costs too much.
I believe that if we were a money-making machine and we were, you know, just rolling in successful corporations and we'd had a lot to manage, I think it's justified to have more board members.
But she says that's not the case. Togg, who works in finance, is one of 12 shareholders running for 4 seats on Sea Alaska's board of directors this spring. She's also the author of a resolution to shrink the board from 13 to 9 members. Sea Alaska opposes the measure, though it would not grant an interview on the topic. But a statement on its website says a smaller board would result, quote, in decreased representation of shareholder interests. It also says fewer seats would lessen the chance of independent nominees being elected. Part of the resolution would make it harder for longtime board members to win re-election by prohibiting a management endorsement. Togg reads from her proposal.
The longest-serving directors will not be eligible for the board slate. However, will be able to run as an independent candidate to begin in the year 2018 and each year thereafter until there are 9 members.
Sea Alaska says the provision targets incumbents with valuable experience. Nicole Hollingstad, another independent board candidate, says that's the point.
I think the current resolution is one more way that shareholders are trying to deliver their message that there are directors who have served far too long on Sea Alaska's board.
Previous resolutions proposed term limits or changes in discretionary voting. All failed. There's no standard board size for Alaska's 12 regional native corporations. Sea Alaska is one of 3 with 13 members, another 3 have 9. The others range from 11 to 23. Edgar Blatchford is a former regional native corporation CEO. He teaches journalism and native studies at the University of Alaska Anchorage. Blatchford says reducing board size just puts more power in a few shareholders' hands.
In my experience in dealing with Chugach Alaska Corporation, I think it has left holes in the argument that it has created efficiencies. I think what it has created is a lack of transparency. And it has put more corporate control, more board control in the board of directors.
Most Sea Alaska shareholders have already cast their ballots, called proxies, by mail or online. The final deadline is at Sea Alaska's annual meeting, June 24th, in Heidelberg on Prince of Wales Island. Results will be announced there. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
The largest vessel in the Alaska Marine Highway fleet will return to service later than planned this summer. The 418-foot ferry Columbia was supposed to start running again at the end of the month with service from Bellingham, Washington to communities in southeast Alaska. The vessel has been in a Portland, Oregon shipyard undergoing repairs to a propeller which struck an unknown object and was damaged last September. Department of Transportation spokeswoman Meadow Bailey explains, it took a while for the parts to be manufactured in Germany and then installed.
And then we went and thought the repairs were successful and were testing the vessel. And during that test, there was another mechanical failure related to that newly installed propeller system. So we're going to have to take the ship back, and the vessel will be pulled back out of the water, and there'll be inspections made to the propeller system again.
The new target date for it to return to service is July 26th. The 408-foot ferry Malaspina will continue to fill in on the Columbia's route. But because it's a smaller vessel, Bailey says some people will not get to stay in reserved cabins, and not all of the cars will fit on board. The Marine Highway is contacting the passengers affected by the change. Earlier this month, the ferry system announced another vessel, the Tustamina, would also be late returning from repair work. 4 days and 710 miles after departing from Victoria, British Columbia, Team Pure and Wild Freebird sailed into Ketchikan, making them the winners of the 2017 Race to Alaska. KRBD's Emma Atkinson has more.
Amidst light rain, with fog eclipsing the tops of the surrounding mountains, brothers Tripp, Chris, and Trevor Bird guided their trimaran, Mama Tried, into Thomas Basin Harbor. They were met with a booming gunshot, cheers, and whistles. Around 30 people gathered at the dock to welcome the winners to Ketchikan. Many had been watching the race closely using the online tracker. It was an exciting finish because Pure and Wild was neck and neck most of the last few hours with Team Big Braderna. This was the closest finish for first place in Race to Alaska's short history. The Bird brothers stepped off the boat and onto the slippery dock, groaning as only men who have spent 4 days whipped by the sea and wind can. Tripp nudged Trevor, the youngest brother, to ring the bell stationed on the edge of the dock, marking their race to Alaska finish. Tripp and Chris had both braved the race to Alaska before, Chris in 2015 and Tripp both years, but this was Trevor's first experience in the West Coast Challenge.
I don't think they told me what it was all about, you know? I thought I was signing up for a sailboat race, but no, it was definitely cool to do it with them, and there's no one I'd rather do it with, and even if they did, you know, trick me into it.
Despite his years of sailing experience, he says conditions just after they broke away from the protection of the islands were fairly extreme.
We got some big waves and some really nasty stuff that kind of all you're doing is nursing the boat through and trying not to break yourself or anything on the boat, really. I mean, it's myself full time, and those were the biggest waves I've ever seen, so pretty nasty.
Minutes after Pure and Wild arrived, Big Braderna sailed past the finish line. The Bird Brothers will walk away with the first-place prize of $10,000, and Big Braderna's crew will receive a set of steak knives. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Emma Atkinson.
Anchorage-based Quintillion has announced plans to go live with its fiber optic project on December 1st of this year. Quintillion's Vice President of External Relations, Christina Wolston, says in order to stay on schedule, the company will have three vessels in Alaska waters this summer to install 40 more miles of fiber, which wasn't completed last year.
Because we needed more time to get the burial depth that we needed off of Prudhoe Bay and Ulliktaq Point. So that one critical piece is what we have left to install this summer. But the rest of the fiber that's currently installed is up and running and in test mode. And so we're able to see all of the connections and how the signals are moving.
After all the connections are made between the sea-based cable and the land-based cable, Wolston says the testing phase will have to continue.
Once the fiber is installed, then we have to do a series of, you know, interconnections and splices with the existing fiber. And then our customers, the telecommunications providers, then they need to do their interconnections with our system to make sure that the equipment is speaking to each other. And then, yes, I don't know if it's an easy button or flip a switch, but the signal goes live.
Fiber between Fairbanks and Dead Horse has been running since April. It's the initial connection for the rest of the coastal communities included in Quintillion's project. Besides Nome, there are land-based fiber connections in Kotzebue, Utqiagvik, Wainwright, Point Hope, and Prudhoe Bay.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Alaska Job Corps Center offers training to people 16 to 24 years old interested in completing their education or starting a career and who meet income eligibility. On-the-job experience is provided in training programs from office administration to water and wastewater treatment. Tweet hashtag careersbeginhere to learn more. This message is sponsored by Alaska Job Corps Center, Chugach Education Services, Inc.
While school is in session, students spend about 30 hours in the classroom every week. That's more than 1,000 hours each academic year. That means teachers play a pivotal role, not only in a student's education, but in their development as a person. Alaska Public Media's Josh Edge spoke with one educator about why a teacher's longevity in the classroom is crucial.
Tom Bowerman is a music teacher, and he's been at Willowcrest Elementary School in Anchorage for 13 years. It's not just his job to educate, it's to inspire. Unlike most educators who work in one classroom with the same children, he spends about an hour each week with every student at Willowcrest, so he sees the students every week for the entire time they're in elementary school. A student starting in kindergarten would spend 7 years with Bowerman, time he spends not only building relationships with the students,
but with the parents that have five and six kids that go through your program, and you see them every year. And, you know, it's sad when you finally get the last one is gone. You know, I'm not going to see this family again. So it's a little sad, but it's also really happy that you've seen them grow from not being able to do anything to being adjusted and, you know, ready to go on to that next level.
That longevity in the classroom and community as a whole builds relationships that persist for years, decades even. While music has always been an important aspect of Bowerman's life, he remembers the impact of one particular teacher from his own formative years.
My high school choir teacher, her name was Cam Bowman, And we just had a 50th anniversary deal last summer where kids that she taught for her 50 years all came back from all over the country, and we had a big concert at West High to celebrate her.
The turnout was impressive. Tom says about 150 people showed up to perform to a packed auditorium at the reunion. Though Cam Bowman's 50-year legacy could be tough to compete with, it exemplifies the influence a single teacher can have on the lives of hundreds of students over the course of decades. And it's an impact that might not even be recognized for years.
Music ties in with science, and it ties in with literature, and it ties in with history. And so we bring all those things together, and we provide it for the kids. And it helps them grow. They might not even realize what they're getting, but they're getting access to it.
Bowerman acknowledges teaching music is different from teaching core subjects like math, history, and science. And he says burnout from a continually growing list of responsibilities and the prospect of growing class sizes is affecting teachers' longevity in the class, especially in light of recent layoff notices issued by the Anchorage School District, spurred by an uncertain level of state funding.
As they get bigger, there's no room in the classroom for the desks, let alone the kids. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the size of sixth graders these days, but they're getting pretty big. You can't put 35 of them. I mean, we've done it before. It didn't last that long because kids moved out, but 35 sixth graders in one room, or 35 to 40 second graders, it's like herding cats.
By the end of this past school year, ASD issued 225 layoff notices to teachers, 5 just at Willowcrest Elementary. Some, or even all, of those teachers could be recalled, depending on how much money the district receives from the state. The Senate is proposing an approximately $65 million cut to education funding, while the House is proposing a slight increase. Bowerman did not receive a pink slip, but he is still concerned about the possible effect on classrooms. And while uncertainty surrounds the issue of potential layoffs, he says teachers knowing their impact remains important.
Teaching can drag on you at times halfway through the year, and you're tired and you've been doing a lot. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, one of the little kids will run up to you and say, "Do we have music today?" And I go, "Yeah, we do." And he says, "All right." Or they'll see you on bus duty. "Do we have music today?" "Yeah, good." You know, when you know that you're connecting with them when you get that kind of response, it just validates what you're doing.
Ultimately, Bowerman strives to inspire and to build lasting relationships with students and their families, which takes time and consistency in both an educator's approach and also their own future. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
The North Slope community of Dead Horse is an unusual place. Its number one purpose is to serve the oil field it's next to, Prudhoe Bay. There are no houses, there's no downtown, no parks, just a series of industrial lots and gravel roads in the middle of the tundra. But Dead Horse does have a store, and the man who runs it is retiring this month after 42 years. Elizabeth Harbaugh has the story as part of the new series, Midnight Oil, from Alaska's Energy Desk.
If you find yourself in Dead Horse and you need some paint, an energy drink, or a book about Sarah Palin, you'll need to go to the Prudhoe Bay General Store. It's the only store in town.
Which we do industrial hoses also through all of this. Copy paper. We sell it. We sell everything.
Dave Pritchard manages the general store, which is what people usually call it instead of its official name, Brooks Range Supply.
I always call us the mall.
Pritchard's been clocking in at Prudhoe Bay since 1975, longer than oil has flowed through the Trans-Alaska pipeline. He started out working as a roustabout for a tug and barge company. After that, he took a job with a supply company that eventually bought up the general store. And over the next few decades, Pritchard's worked his way to the top.
And then I've done the sales, I've been purchasing, I've done a little bit of everything. I was assistant manager for years, done the welding supply counter.
Except for the occasional adventurous tourist driving the Dalton Highway, Pritchard's customers are mostly oil workers. And the oil industry never stops. So when Pritchard's on duty, he doesn't stop either.
We are open 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So we're open Christmas, we're open Thanksgiving, we're open every holiday. We're working.
More than 15,000 oil workers move through Dead Horse every month, but nobody lives there full time. Pritchard works two and twos, 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off, a pretty common schedule for the North Slope workers. When he's off, Pritchard flies to his house in Cincinnati, or a condo in Florida. Pritchard says that might sound great, but it takes a special kind of person to work where he does.
There's a lot of people that come up can't handle the dark. There's a lot of people up here can't handle the light.
Plus, he says, the 2 weeks away from home can be tough for families. Pritchard's never been married and doesn't have kids. And he's seen a lot over the last 42 years, including some big changes. Back in the 70s and 80s, Pritchard says things could get a little crazy.
When Alaska Airlines first came up here, they had brought Playboy bunnies and beer kegs.
Did you see the Playboy bunnies and the beer kegs?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was at that party.
Today, oil workers aren't allowed to drink once they land at Prudhoe Bay. Things are more tranquil nowadays. And Pritchard doesn't mind that. Working in the middle of the tundra, hundreds of miles away from the nearest city, he's become more in tune with nature's patterns.
All of a sudden, you'll see the foxes will be plentiful. And then the squirrels won't be that many squirrels. All of a sudden, all the squirrels around and the foxes aren't that many because they birth that way. You know, it's a cycle.
Another cycle Pritchard's gotten used to is fluctuations in oil prices.
I've seen it going both ways, and I've gone through about three or four ups and downs. And right now we're on a big down thing, but, you know, it happened in the 80s, it happened in the 90s, and now it's happened in the 2000s.
Brooks Range Supply isn't an oil company, but like every other business in Dead Horse, it's suffering through the latest oil price slump. Pritchard says it's hard. They've had to cut jobs and limit the number of hours employees can work. But pretty soon, Pritchard won't have to worry about that. He retires this month. I ask him what he thinks the future holds for the Prudhoe Bay General Store.
Well, the future won't have me here. I'm kind of looking forward to that. But it all depends on the price of oil and the way things go. And I always joke my father, oh, you pay too little for your gas right now. And he laughs at me and says, yeah, I know what you mean.
Pritchard's last day at the general store is the 27th. After his final flight lifts off from Prudhoe Bay, he's looking forward to golfing and spending more time with his dad. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
This story is part of our series, Midnight Oil, about the pipeline that shaped Alaska. Next week, we'll look at why it was so hard to find oil in Prudhoe Bay. Finally tonight, a correction in a story yesterday with Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin. She said two Capitol Police officers were shot in Virginia. In fact, both were injured, though only one was shot. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman, Tripp Kraus, Ed Schoenfeld, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes, Josh Edge, Elizabeth Harbaugh, and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Zoe Sobel in Unalaska, Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, Davis Hovey in Nome, and Emma Atkinson in Ketchikan. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. Alaska Pacific University works with students to maximize their credit transferability and give credit for prior work experience. At APU, your path to degree completion is outlined right from the start. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.